was at the college, and I belonged to a sorority, and there were all kinds of activities at the sorority. And
like what?
What do you mean?
What kind of activities?
Oh, there was rushing, there were dinners, there were writing songs, there were, then there was Panhellenic, which was the overall for all, you know, the head of all sororities. And there were interfraternity things, there were debates, there were plays, there were floats, there were, you know, college kid stuff.
Who was head of your sorority? Do you remember?
Well, I was president for 2 years, and and Flo Merwitzer Abrams was a president, and Flo LeWinter Katz was a president, and after my time, Doris Binstock was a president, and Vera Weiss, and Doris Kalmanson Hirsch, who now lives in California. And
were most of the people who went to Pitt from Pittsburgh?
I would say most, yeah, during my era. Either Pittsburgh or the surrounding areas, but you were really a very privileged person if you went away to school in my era. Nobody went away to school. And that's why I think Pittsburgh is unique in that everybody knows everybody. And I think it's because today, my daughter wouldn't come back to Pittsburgh because she doesn't know anybody here. And we all grew up together, went to school together, went to college together, went to work together, and it was an entirely different thing. And newcomers to the city are very amazed at Pittsburgh. Everybody knows everybody or something, you know.
And as a newcomer, I'll attest to that.
Yeah, are you a newcomer? Yes. Well, that's what happens. Pittsburgh is very unique. And
did you ever live at the sorority?
No. I never lived there. We started getting the girls in from New York and wherever, mm-hmm. Washington. They would come and live at the sorority house. But
how many members did you have?
Oh, you know, it changed every year, and depending on how many rushes you got. But it was a big sorority. It was about 30, 35 active going, and sorority nights were established as Monday nights. There were no activities. Everybody had sorority meetings Monday night.
Mm-hmm.
And the girls from out of town, my poor mother, I must have been awful. My poor mother stayed home on Mondays because she never knew whether I was bringing eight girls for dinner. But she always had enough.
Did you eat dinner at home or at the restaurant?
Sorority days we ate dinner at home. And during the week we usually ate at home. And it was just on weekends that we'd go downtown sometimes, but my mother would carry these baskets of food home from the restaurant when we were growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And so that we would have food at home. It was only, when I started to work, we ate at the restaurants. When I went to high school, we ate at home. We always had live-in help, you know,
mm-hmm.
And so there was always somebody in the house that was with my mother work.
Did the help do any of the cooking?
No, my mother brought everything cooked. When I got married, I had never, never lit a stove or turned a knob on the stove because there were three girls, and I was the one who used to clean up, and my two sisters, you know, like on a Sunday,
mm-hmm.
And my two sisters would go in the kitchen. When I got married, I didn't even know how to boil water.
How did you learn?
I read a cookbook, and I discovered that if you knew how to read, you could cook. That's right. The first thing I ever made was oatmeal for my husband's breakfast, because my mother said I had to give him breakfast. He didn't eat breakfast, but I had to make it for him. I read the directions on the box, I bet, six times. And then I read each line. And when I came out oatmeal, I was so surprised, and I made up my mind, if you can read, you can cook. And so I did. And I'm a good cook when I cook, and I cook so much anymore.
Tell me about Temple Sinai. And it must have been quite a change for you to go.
Well, Temple Sinai started in 1946, and they were in a church. And
who started it?
There were a group of about 12 people, the Paul Chernews. I was not a part of that group.
How do you spell it?
C-H-E-R-N-E-W, Ruth and Paul. Chernew were part of it. Lil and Nathan Holstein were part of it. Leah and Happy Solomon were part of it. Flo and Mike Lebov. And I don't know who else. Huh?
How do you spell Lebov?
L-E-E-B-O-V. I don't know who else. We were not a part of it then because we belonged to B'nai Israel. My husband was brought up at Poet Zedek. And his father was very active at Poet Zedek. And when we got married, Oscar's folks moved to Florida. They had retired, and they had a store, general store, in Verona, and Verona, Pennsylvania. And that's where my husband really was brought up till he was maybe past bar mitzvah age. I guess he came to the city when he was about 15, 14, I don't know how old he was, 12, I don't know. But because he went to Hayter in New Kensington, you know, on a train after school and stuff. But they retired and moved to Florida, and my family belonged to B'nai Israel. So we joined B'nai Israel. But Oscar was not active. He just went because I went, and he would go on the High Holy Days, and that's all. And he really wasn't interested, and he wasn't real thrilled with Rabbi Lichter.
Why not?
Well, there were a couple of things that happened. Oscar had a brother. How do you say that? Oscar's gone, but his brother's living, an older brother who lives in Florida now. And Jess was very, very bright, still is, bright man. And he was bar mitzvahed at B'nai Israel. And after his bar mitzvah, it must have been several months later, there was a boy in his class that couldn't learn his Haftorah. And the principal of the Hebrew school, who was Nathan Savage, asked Jeff to read the Haftorah
for the boy.
And so, of course, Jeff came home and told his parents, and everybody was all excited, and everybody was invited to come to shul that Saturday morning because Jeff was going to read the Haftorah again. And Rabbi Lichter didn't get wind of all of this until, I think, the day before or something, and said absolutely Jeff could not do it. That if the boy couldn't learn his Haftorah, then he could just say the blessings, and that was it, and Jeff could not do it. And, of course, the folks were very upset, and they left B'nai Israel, and they went to Adath Jeshurun because, you know, their grandmother lived with them, so they had a walk. They also belonged to Poet Zedek, but they couldn't walk there for the holiday, so this is what they did.
This is when, where were they living at the time?
On Baywood Street, and they moved from Verona to Baywood. Then, when we got married, I said, the grandmother had died, and so the folks were back in, actively engaged in all the stuff at Poet Zedek. So I like to start out on the right foot, so I said we'd have Rabbi Lichter and Rabbi, Oh, I know his name so well. It'll come to me. Right now I can't think of it. I'd have both rabbis officiated our wedding.
The other rabbis from Holy City.
Rabbi Lichter from B'nai Israel and Rabbi Shapiro, Joseph Shapiro from Polytheistic. So, but I didn't ask Rabbi Shapiro yet. And when we became engaged, Rabbi Lichter was on vacation in Atlantic City. And I wrote him a letter and told him that I was engaged and that Oscar and I would like to have him officiate at our wedding, and da-da-da-da, all the stuff. He wrote back a congratulatory letter, and he told me to call the office and make a date with the secretary, which, of course, I did, and everything was set. Then, you know, before you get married, you go to the rabbi's office, you give him the Hebrew name, you know, all the stuff, and Oscar and I went to his office, and by that time, I had not asked, I had told Rabbi Lichter in my letter to him that I would like him and Rabbi Shapiro to officiate. And when he wrote back and congratulated me, he said, Rabbi Shapiro is a wonderful man, and I will be very happy to officiate with him, et cetera, et cetera. So when we had the meeting with the rabbi, it was a month or so before, my intended father-in-law said, what do you need two rabbis for? Marion and Al, that's Albert, is Oscar's brother. They're going to get married. They'll use Rabbi Shapiro. You belong to B'nai Israel, so use Rabbi Lichter. You don't need two rabbis, you know. And he was leaving for Florida in 2 days or the next day. Okay. So I decided he doesn't want me to use Shapiro. I'll just use Lichter, and I had Cantor Heiser. So when we had the meeting with Rabbi Lichter, I said, oh, by the way, Rabbi Shapiro will not officiate. We'll just have you and Cantor Heiser. And he said, well, that's fine. He says, you know, Rabbi Shapiro is a wonderful man and a very bright man and a wonderful rabbi. But, you know, he's so religious. He always spoils things. Sometimes he says, you know, he won't leave his house until it gets dark out. And sometimes he calls up these weddings and da-da-da. And it had no relationship to our wedding, because we were married on a Tuesday, the day after Labor Day, because Tuesday was the day that my mother and father closed the restaurant, and that made it easier. And he goes into all this. This Rabbi Shapiro is so orthodox, and he won't do this, and he won't do that. Well, he's not supposed to. When we left there, all I know is that Oscar's last words to the rabbi were, make the ceremony as short as possible. Just say what you have to say. And as we walked down to go home, he said to me, Oscar said to me, why are we getting married by Rabbi Lichter? We may as well go to the First Presbyterian Church in East Liberty. And he really was angry. So that stayed with him.
Mm-hmm.
And so he just wasn't happy at B'nai Israel. And Temple Sinai, as I said, started in 1946, and we had a lot of friends who were talking to us about joining Temple Sinai. So I went to my mother and father and asked permission if they would care if I went to Temple Sinai, and they said, no, I have to go where my husband wants to go. So that's what we did. We went to Sinai, and group of our friends went, and it was a small congregation because it had just started. It was very warm and very friendly, and our whole social life became Temple Sinai.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody were friends, and we'd go to services Friday evening. You wouldn't think of missing it, and after services we'd all go out for coffee and cake, and and we would have bazaars, and we had luncheons, and we were in the kitchen all the time cooking and preparing and all that stuff. It was just wonderful.
Who was the original rabbi?
The original rabbi was Burton Levinson. And
L-E-V-I-N?
S-O-N, yes. And
was he ordained Reform?
He was ordained Reform. And when he left because, you know how it is with rabbis. Some people like him and some people don't. Can't make everybody happy. But he was getting sick at the time. And he eventually had a nervous breakdown. But he left, and we got Rabbi Ilson, Aaron B. Ilson, I-L-S-O-N.
When was that?
Oh, no, let's see. Rabbi Ilson came when my children weren't confirmed yet because they had Rabbi Ilson. And, I don't know how long it was, but he was there, and I guess I could figure it out, but...
Well, going back to the formation, you said you weren't part of it, but
no.
You must have known something about it. Why did they decide to open a new synagogue?
Because there were a lot of people who... You were either Orthodox, Conservative, or Reform. The only Reform temple was Rode of Sholem.
Mm-hmm.
Rode of Sholem did not have bar mitzvahs. They did
really?
Not have. They didn't teach Hebrew in the schools. Nobody knew any Hebrew. And there were a group of people who were not happy with Orthodoxy or Conservative. And they wanted something in between. And they wanted to be reformed, but they wanted to have the bar mitzvahs, and they wanted their children to learn Hebrew. But they didn't necessarily feel they had to do it with a hat on. I don't know. My father was quite upset. He never said so, but he was upset when we left B'nai Israel. And I think that the only reason they were upset is that they like to see the whole family together for the High Holy Days. And, of course, Oscar and I went to Sinai.
And your husband didn't have problems with the Reform philosophy?
No. My husband was, even though he went, grew up in a kosher home, went to Pole Tzedek, had all the religious training, my husband never, he said that all these... things were man-made, and he didn't believe in the lighting of the candles. Or we did it because I was the one who said we had to, I guess. And he was real active at Temple. He was president of the Brotherhood. He was president of the congregation. And at that time, the president of the congregation would sit up on the bima,
mm-hmm.
you know, every Shabbos. And I would be real annoyed with him when he sat beside me at him, because he never read any of the prayers. He knew a lot of them, and he knew his Hebrew. But he said, I go because you want me to go. And he was just not very observant.
Were the original founders mostly people who had belonged to conservative synagogues before, or to Rode of Sholem?
I think both. I think that the Perskys must have belonged to a conservative. They may have even belonged to an Orthodox. And the Chernus, I think, belonged to a conservative. I don't know about the Nate Katzens. I really don't know. I think that, and by the time we came, most of them were from conservative backgrounds, I would say.
Mm-hmm. So there was a Hebrew school?
There was a Hebrew school. The children went to Hebrew school twice a week. Not really twice a week. They went once during the week and once on their Sunday school. Well, either there were two sessions, Sunday and Saturday. And whatever day they had a couple of hours of Hebrew there.
Were there Saturday morning services?
Only when there was a bar mitzvah. And if a holiday came out on a Saturday. But no, our services were Friday night, and that's the way they are today, too.
And, but how many families were there? By the time you were there, when it got
about going? About 600.
That's quite a few.
Mm-hmm. It really grew. We were the envy of the town. We really were, because we were just getting everybody. And as I said, it was an active, friendly. I mean, we just did everything together. Everybody knew everybody. Now I go, I don't know half the people there. You know, it's all different. And I come from different backgrounds and out-of-towners, and we have a lot of mixed, you know.
Mixed meaning?
Mixed marriages, you know, want to remain there.
Who's the current rabbi?
Rabbi Edward Paul Cohn, C-O-H-N. And he's wonderful. He's just very warm. Tree of Life started to grow, and Templestein I started to go down. People were having difficulty with Rabbi Ilson.
Mm-hmm.
And he was still there. They tried to get rid of him, and they couldn't. And
when was this? What period of time?
This was...
The 50s, the 60s?
The 60s, I guess. The 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And he... And so we were losing a lot of members. And Tree of Life was getting them. And so our congregation went down to about 300 families, maybe even less, I don't know. And then we got Rabbi Fuchs when mm-hmm. Ilson left, F-U-C-H-S. And he was trying to bring the young people into Temple. And he succeeded a little, but he was only with us about 4 years when he was called to take a temple in the large temple in Cleveland, the big one. And that was, I don't know if he really wanted to leave, but he couldn't pass up that opportunity. And he left, and we got Rabbi Barak, B-A-R-A-C-K, but he was only with us 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got Rabbi Cohn, who's just marvelous, and we hope he'll be with us forever. And I think Rabbi Cohn's been with us now in December. The end of December will be 3 years that he's here. And I think we got over 100 members, maybe even last year. The first year he was here, he was just starting to... I think they got 100 new members this year, and we're starting to grow again.
Why did Rabbi Barak leave?
Because we asked him to.
What didn't the congregation like?
His contract was over. Well, he was a kind of a guy who gave wonderful sermons.
Mm-hmm.
But he never returned telephone calls, didn't show up when he was supposed to show up. The wedding was at 7 o'clock. He might have arrived at 8.
Oh my goodness.
He really wasn't for us.
Yeah. So how does a synagogue go about getting a new rabbi? Were you involved with it?
Oh, no.
Were any of these?
No, I wasn't, nor was my husband. He didn't want to be a part of it. But what they do is they contact the Union of American Hebrew Congregations in New York,
mm-hmm.
and let them know that they're interested in another rabbi, and of course they want to know why you're interested. And they let the rabbi know,
mm-hmm.
so that the rabbi can start looking for a new pulpit. And then there's a search committee, and the union sends rabbis to be interviewed,
mm-hmm.
Rabbis who are interested in changing pulpits.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, yeah, you invite them, and then meet with them, and they come 1 week and give a sermon, and then you go to their congregation and try to find out what's, you know, going on. And
do your children belong to Sinai?
What?
Excuse me. Do your children belong to Sinai?
Well, Marjorie's out of town. She
mm-hmm.
doesn't belong. Chuck did belong, and then he couldn't afford it, so he doesn't belong, but he promised me that when Molly's ready for kindergarten, which will be next year, he'll join. He said he wouldn't join any place else.
You mentioned that your sister keeps kosher.
Mm-hmm. I have two sisters. One keeps kosher, mm-hmm. one's like me. One belongs to Sinai, the other one belongs, the one upstairs belongs to B'nai Israel.
Did she start that when she got married?
Mm-hmm.
At her husband's request?
At her husband's request. And now it's just a part of her, you know. Mm-hmm. She couldn't do it any other way.
Good. Back a minute to, we have a few minutes. At Pitt, you had mentioned last time that you were friendly with Helen Rush.
Helen Poole Rush, yeah.
Okay. And what was her job at Pitt?
My job?
Her job.
Her job. She was the Assistant Dean of Women.
Okay. And what did she do as the Assistant Dean of Women?
Well, she was in charge of, I guess it would be similar to a vice principal's job at school. You're in charge of the students. She was in charge of all the sororities. And, I don't know, we met with her, we had counseling with her, any problems you went to her.
Such as what? Like what? What would you go to her for? I mean, do you remember anything in particular?
Oh, I never went to her, I just, I think if you were having problems with your studies, and or why, if you were failing, or, you know, you'd go and try to work things out, maybe with a less heavy schedule.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing.
And you remained friendly with her after school?
Mm-hmm.
Did she have a lot of young people who were
around
her?
Yeah, I think so. She was a very warm person. Very warm person. Well, everybody liked her. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to think of the Dean of Women's name, Thurston.
Mm-hmm.
Is that her name? I don't know. But she was there. She was an older woman, and then Helen Rush became Dean of Women. When, was it Thurston? I think it was Thurston who left, retired.
Mm-hmm. We're just a bit out of time, aren't we?
I think we might have a few more minutes.
Yeah, I didn't want to start.
Good.
I didn't want to say anything. Okay. You want to tell us about Rabbi Ilson?
Not really.
Why did he leave?
Why did he leave?
Why did the people
leave? Well, as my husband would say, he was a fraud. I don't know whether I want that on the record, but I already said it. He was the kind, for instance, I'll just give you an example. I was president of Sisterhood,
mm-hmm.
and I was, I guess, running a meeting. I wasn't president. I was vice president of Sisterhood. The president was Rachel Porter. The president went on a cruise, and so I took over her duties while she was gone. I mean, this is just an example, and. I went to all the meetings that she would have normally gone to, and I went to a religious school meeting one evening, and Nat Diamondstone was sitting there, and she turned to me, she said, Helen, at the board meeting tomorrow, I'm going to make a motion that we do away with the Institute on Judaism for Christian clergy and lay leaders. And we had that every year,
mm-hmm.
you know, we said something about Judaism and gave them a Jewish, an ethnic lunch, etc. And I said to her, Nat, you can't do that because even if one person responds, the rabbi wants that program. And she said, well, I sent out 100 letters, and I got about 3 responses, and I'm not going to embarrass myself, and I'm going to make a motion that we don't have. So the next day, I went to the beauty parlor in the morning, And as soon as I got through at the beauty parlor, I ran to temple to see the rabbi, and he was at a Kiwanis meeting or something at Poli's. So I said to the secretary, I must talk with him, it's very important. So she got him on the phone, and I said, Rabbi, are you coming to our meeting? And he says, I don't know. And I said, well, this is what happened, and I told the story. And he said, you can't let that happen. He says, we're going to have that institute. And I says, well, that's what I told Dan, and I would appreciate it if you would get here. I'll bring it up last on the agenda so that you can talk for it, and if you talk for it, I'm sure the board will go along with you. And I hung up. And I went to the meeting, and I kept pushing that down on the agenda. The rabbi didn't come. Anyhow, to make a long story short, he never did come. And we discussed it, and the board went along with Nat to drop the institute. And the meeting is about to be adjourned when the rabbi walked in. And somebody had said something, and while she was talking, I wrote a note to the rabbi and told him what had happened. And said, please say a few words, and they might go back. And I really wasn't following parliamentary procedure, because I was really trying to do the right thing for the rabbi. And I called on him to say a few words, and I thought that's what he would speak about. And he got up and gave a 20-minute lecture.